Bold technological ideas have captured our culture's imagination and more than a fair share of many engineers and designers' time and energy. The results of recent innovations are yet to be fully realized, but it is undeniable that what were once futuristic notions of technological advancement are becoming our reality. From the iPhone to Google Glass to Tesla's recently announced driving assist technology, we are in the midst of a new expansion of how computers fit into our daily lives. So what's next? How about a holographic computer that makes it possible to interact with high-fidelity holograms in physical spaces? Michael Gourlay, a 1993 Georgia Tech graduate in physics, is working on just such a project at Microsoft. He is the principal lead software development engineer on Microsoft's HoloLens in the Environmental Understanding Group. HoloLens is touted by the company as the first fully untethered holographic computer. Microsoft showcased the possibilities this summer with a live demo of Minecraft, a game which allows gamers to build entire Lego-like landscapes and worlds. A HoloLens wearer was shown interacting with the holographic game world just as one might a miniature-scale model. Except with this model, you could actually poke your head through the walls to see the inside of a building. Michael Gourlay delivered a technical lecture at Georgia Tech on environmental factors in delivering this type of experience. He was the GVU Center's Distinguished Alumnus Brown Bag Lecturer for 2015. Afterward, he talked with us a little bit about HoloLens, what led us to this point, and where things may head next. All right, Mike, well, thanks for coming out. You caught my interest at the beginning. I just looked up HoloLens, and it's just like the self-driving car that Tesla just announced. I had no idea that we were living in the future. It seems like this stuff just came out of nowhere, I guess, for the consumer. You know, on your end, you know, it's been gestating much longer. So I guess my question is, for HoloLens, how did we get here? Right.
It's like I mentioned, you know, that gentleman asked a kind of similar question, which is like a lot of the algorithms and the technology has been around for a while. So why now? And I think really it comes down to the right people had the right idea, and some of the sort of small, like the pieces that we weren't thinking about maybe fell into place, like possibly, you know, that we ran. Like here's what I think is part of it. We've been building game consoles for decades now, and if you look at the last two generations of game consoles, the delta between them is probably the smallest delta ever. Meaning, like, if you look at going from pre-PlayStation to PlayStation, that was a transition from primarily 2D to primarily 3D. And PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 added a lot of capabilities, and 2 to 3 basically gave you high definition. And going from 3 to 4, or, you know, let's say it's Microsoft, the original Xbox, going to Xbox 360 and 360 to Xbox One, the delta between the 360 and the Xbox One is smaller than the delta of the original Xbox to the 360. And I think we've kind of hit the plateau on what gaming consoles can promise without some other major innovation. And so I think in order to really take it to the next level, you have to change something else. And I think this is one of many things that can change for that. But also, I think it's probably a combination of technologies. Like for the Oculus, it was, you know, displays that were tiny enough, yet high enough resolution. And the analogous thing for displays and other technologies, that's a factor. So small displays are becoming possible. Also, mobile processors are becoming more and more capable and more common. And also, like, it's starting to get to the point where certain cell phones have GPUs in them, and that's probably, you know, one of the factors that basically tips us over to being able to render 3D graphics on a portable platform. So I think it's all of those things, but I think of them as kind of like the loose ends of a sort of decades-long build-up. You know, they were just the last few little tiny things. I don't think there was any one major addition.
You mentioned you like the idea of world-locking objects. You know, what else is exciting, a possibility from your research side?
Surface reconstruction is a big one. I think that, you know, the fact that, like, augmented reality has been possible for a long time, and surface reconstruction has been around for a long time. The merger of those two, I think, is what really makes the system compelling, meaning, you know, like that virtual characters can start to behave in a way that we would perceive as being normal or lifelike. And then I think a next step in that general direction is if there was some sort of semantic understanding of things. The really basic thing is that, you know, we're standing on a floor. I showed a picture of a virtual companion walking beside someone. And the fact that they're not walking on top of the table is part of what gives them the lifelike quality. But it's pretty plausible that a virtual character would stand on a table because they wouldn't know better, right? So if they can just not do stupid things, that would be a good first step. So I think it's actually, in a way, like in the meanwhile, it's good to have virtual companions that can be forgiven for doing stupid things. Like, for example, it was a virtual cat. You know, real cats, well, they don't respect the floor. They don't care
right.
that it's a chair or not. They'll just sit anywhere. For cats, everything is up for game.
So you're saying start with cats.
Start with cats. Okay. Plus, I just like cats. So I think we should start with cats.
Excellent. So last question. It seems like the applications could just build up quickly. And I saw the marketing for HoloLens. It's like, wow. This is maybe too open-ended, but what do you think is just the killer app, like the same video games, right?
I wish I knew. I mean, that question I've been asking for years. And the thing is, like, you know, I had this list of scenarios that I, you know, cherry-picked to demonstrate my point. But for every one of these that I put in my slide deck, I threw away probably a dozen others. And so the point is that I've just seen so many super, super compelling applications that I don't know. You know, like, in fact, I'm not even sure the idea of a killer app really resonates with me anymore because, like, if you ask the same thing about my phone, that's not even something I have to speculate because smartphones are everywhere. Everyone's already convinced they need one, but the killer app for you is probably different than the killer app for me. Other than things like, you know, we all have the ability to make phone calls and calendar and email, but I wouldn't say that any of those dominate. And if you took any one of them away, I'd probably still have one. But like an example of something that I'm interested in that probably no one else is I like to go and pick mushrooms. And that can be difficult and dangerous if you pick the wrong ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a mushroom app on my phone helps me do that. So I wouldn't call that a killer app, but I think the killer app is the ability for the device to have such a wide variety of apps that it appeals to anybody, you know, because no matter what your interest is, there's probably an app for that.
Thanks for joining us. We've been talking with Michael Gourlay at Microsoft and some of the ideas behind HoloLens. To find out more about the GVU Center at Georgia Tech, visit us online at www.gvu.gatech.edu. Our community of researchers are exploring new ways to advance human potential through technical innovation.